Hello and welcome to Chats, the television podcast, Season 8B, Roots Chat. My name is Alan, and I'm joined, as always, by Magellan.
Hello.
Welcome to the show, Magellan. Thank you for joining me on this fine, fine episode of Roots Chats.
Thank you for joining me.
Wait, who's joining who in this contest?
Who's driving the boat?
I ate the bones. I drove the boat and I ate the bones.
I'm
at the same
home
time.
Alone, but I'm 45 years old.
My wife is gone. Hey, everybody, welcome to Roots. This is a podcast where Magellan and I just kind of goof off for about 2 hours, and occasionally we talk about a TV show. Mm-hmm. How does that sound, America? What do you think about that? Is it good? I like to think it's good. I'm really good at playing that character that like cannot stop talking, because that's not a character, it's my real self. Anyways, yeah, I'm doing well. It's still Sunday. We've hit a very good stride with our Sunday recordings. Mm-hmm. I finished building one of my model kits yesterday. I'm really happy about that. And I'm excited to talk about more Roots with you, man.
Yeah, me too.
So we can get right into it. This week on Roots Chats, we watched the final episode of Roots: The Next Generations, which is part 7. This episode was written for television by Ernest Kinoy, and it was directed by John Erman. It originally aired on February 24th, 1979. Magellan, could you tell me what happened in part 7 of Roots TNG?
In this episode, in October 1960, Alex attends his great-aunt Liz's funeral, but he and his father Simon still don't get along. Alex is now making a decent living as a writer, mainly for magazines, but his father is still disappointed in him. He interviews Malcolm X for an article he's writing for Reader's Digest on the Nation of Islam, which leads to an article in Playboy about the black leader. Playboy then arranges an interview with George Lincoln Rockwell, the leader of the American Nazi Party. His successful articles lead to his first book, The Autobiography of Malcolm X, completed only a short time before Malcolm X's assassination in 1965. He begins to research his own family history, attempting to locate written records that would substantiate the oral history he's heard from his childhood. After much searching, he believes he's found Kunta Kinte's original village in what is now Gambia.
Whoa. This episode is handling a lot. It's kind of got three distinct, very distinct acts to it. What did you think, Magellan, as a conclusion to the Roots story, as we know it, and as the end of the book Roots, how do you think this succeeds or does not?
That's a really, really complicated question.
Of course.
I think that just like the rest of Roots, The Next Generations, there's some valuable meditation here on leaders in the African American community and different philosophies about how to respond to, deal with, combat white supremacy. You know, what's to be done about white supremacy now that slavery is gone, but it continues to exist. So all the stuff with Malcolm X, I thought was pretty well handled. Actually, I was kind of worried that it wasn't going to be, but for as spark notesy as it is, I think it's a good depiction of Malcolm X. I thought James Earl Jones was like very sexy as Alex Haley.
Big time.
And he was just really fun to watch throughout the whole thing. And he's funny, and his stuff with his dad was a little like, okay, but I thought that they did a fine job with it. And then, you know, the last bit where it's like, hey, he's writing Roots now. I have some extremely mixed feelings about, I would say.
Yeah, I have qualms. I have a couple qualms.
And mixed in, you know, there are some very triumphant feelings and some very, very reserved feelings about that whole bit. So I think there's a big discussion to be had there. But overall, I thought that the episode one of the best of Roots the Next Generation, I think. It was just entertaining and engaging throughout, and I think it covers a lot of ground.
Totally, yeah. Thoroughly invested through the whole episode in Haley's, like, progression from what is called a squibs writer. So he's writing like articles in different magazines and whatnot that don't have that many citations. So he's not doing, it's not like a very highly researched work. It's considered lower quality. And the conflict that causes with him and his father, kind of his dad saying that he doesn't have a real career, being a writer is never going to get you paid, doesn't matter what kind of work you do. And watching that turn around, I loved as like the story of Alex Haley at the center of all of this. Mm-hmm. But I also appreciate that, yeah, the series, this episode especially doesn't focus just on Haley and his family. It's also about Malcolm X, and it's about George Lincoln Rockwell, and then it's about Kunta Kinte. Like, it goes all across this back end of his career, the second half, the kind of larger half of his career, I guess, mm-hmm. And shows him growing. And something I liked is that James Earl Jones plays him pretty still, like, fresh-faced and a little bit, not ignorant, but just, like, wide-eyed and bushy-tailed, yeah. Where he's, mm-hmm. like, really excited to get his big break. And I think that's a good natural progression from the Haley that we saw last episode, who was very, like, unsure about the world and apathetic and like, unclear on even, like, what his performance was supposed to be like. It's cool to watch him lock into, like, this is what Alex Haley acts like. This is who the character should be. I think Jones does a really good job of, like, setting that tone correctly. But we start with some family stuff. You know, I actually thought it was a really bold directorial choice to open on all of the different graves in Henning, mm-hmm. Tennessee, as they're at his aunt's funeral. Mm-hmm. You had noted this as well. It's a deliberate choice, right? To just be like, here is everybody who lived here, and they're all dead now, no longer with us, and another one is now going to be buried. And this is the rest of the Haley family. It's his dad, his brother, George, and him.
Yeah, Roots doesn't make a lot of directorial choices that are quite that obvious, but that was one where I thought that it's making a pretty bold statement, and I found it moving.
Yeah, the big directorial one I thought of was last episode, just the first person shot going into the brothel, where I was like, okay, you can do that, I guess. Right, it doesn't like say too much about it, but, you know, that definitely felt like, oh, someone directed this, I suppose, or the mm-hmm. camera work was deliberate. And so, yeah, he has some conflict with his dad. It is kind of, it's something to see Simon Haley evolve from, like, this. He's definitely interested in civil rights and the advancement of, like, African Americans in society. Mm-hmm. But he's still coming at it from this, like, pretty conservative Christian intellectual angle, mm-hmm. that rejects sort of like civil disobedience and civil violence as the civil rights movement is like blossoming around them. He kind of balks at them talking about later Malcolm X being what he views as like an anti-Christian, mm-hmm. violent, brutish kind of guy, which it's good that they have that perspective, because that's such a common misconception about Malcolm X in society, even today, is that he was sort of the violent Martin Luther King, or like mm-hmm. The one who held guns, sort of like we talked about Stokely Carmichael a couple weeks ago. Malcolm X also viewed as this, like, angry, righteous, mean person. Mm-hmm. So I thought it was important then that we transitioned from that right into this Nation of Islam meeting, which is like a very sparse, like, I guess it's supposed to be a bar or a restaurant. And Haley goes in the back and meets Malcolm X. And they start talking about, like, his history and his life and writing the autobiography that would go on to become one of Alex Haley's most seminal works. Mm-hmm. Collaboration with Malcolm X, sort of I think he describes it as a written for or something. What is, like, the terminology?
As told to is the subheading.
Thank you. Yeah, as told to Haley. So they, like, write it together, and they have several interviews. They obviously don't show too many of them, but we get enough to know that they, like, develop a bond over time, because in this first conversation, it seems Malcolm X, like, specifically says he doesn't really trust Haley. He's still working for, like, a white publication and working in their field, and he's mm-hmm. like, that doesn't make you, I don't trust you just because you're black, like, I still have my reservations.
Yeah, he says he trusts him like 5%. And then later, the last time we see him, Malcolm X says he trusts Alex Haley 70%. And it's this very touching, like, wow, me?
Wow, me? Wow, so he likes sweet. Me now.
And I think that, so I've not read the autobiography of Malcolm X. It's sort of a thing I'm a little ashamed that I haven't read it yet, because the old school I taught at, my 11th graders read it both the years that I was there. But I've kind of sat in the class, in their English class, while they've talked about it a couple times. And I'm pretty sure that like, I trust you 5%, I trust you 70% thing is from...
Oh, really?
Is from the autobiography of Malcolm X. Like, it's something he actually said.
Speaking of the, like, pulling from the book, there's almost every moment with how Malcolm X in this episode is pulled from either the book or from just completely accurate history. Like, even his assassination scene where the two men are fighting about, like, take your hands out of my pockets is, according to people who were there, exactly what happened the day that he... They even got the weapons right. It was really, like... striking. When I read about it, it felt like I was reading the script of the episode, because they nailed it historically, like how he was assassinated. Yeah. But yeah, he's talking about how he doesn't trust Haley, and I like that Haley here is a very, like, because he's never been we've never seen him as the type of person who, like, has an intimate understanding of civil rights leaders or, like, who all these people are. He knows what they are, he knows what they do, but he's kind of more like the journalist who's passively absorbing all of this information and making his own decisions.
Yeah, he's sort of... Alex Haley is a pretty interesting character, because he has been kind of, like, apathetic, maybe not apathetic, but just sort of blasé towards the ideas of, like, his heritage, his family, you know, what it means to be a Black person and civil rights, and, like, what's the right way to go about these things or achieve equality or whatever. He has kind of just been like a self-motivated, self-interested guy who's like, yeah, I want to be a writer. And my being Black is something that is just a fact of my experience. And it comes up here and there. But we're sort of seeing him, I think, maybe this is just the way the show portrays it, but it feels like we're sort of seeing him develop a consciousness that's like societal in nature and not just about his sort of immediate experience.
Right, exactly. But it's not to say that he's entirely like, I don't have any opinion on civil rights. Like, he's learning this stuff.
And yeah, I just mean more that he has like a casual approach to it, it feels like.
For sure, for sure. Like, even when he talks to his dad later.
Or certainly more casual than his dad, I guess is the best way.
Exactly, exactly right. That also comes through when he meets the woman that he spends most of this episode with, who I believe is named Miss Richards, Odile Richards.
Mm-hmm.
And how he's like talking to her about this stuff and how they disagree. I don't think it was as interesting as like Simon and was it Bertha?
And Bertha,
Bertha, where it's like their conflict makes like perfect sense, but also brings them together. But also this relationship that Alex Haley has with Odile Richards is like, it doesn't go well. It never, like a lot of relationships he has to women, has some like fraught elements to it from moment one, and kind of we watch it go poorly pretty fast. But before we pivot to that, the last thing I was interested in from this portrayal, I wanted to talk about the guy playing Malcolm X. And I thought it was cool that, like, again, this being sort of a SparkNotes history of civil rights, he even brings up Elijah Muhammad, who I did not know about. I'm sad to say I was not familiar with that part of the history of the Nation of Islam, honestly. He was alive at this time. It's fascinating that Malcolm X talks about him as this prophet and as this holy figure. And Alex Haley's like, he is a guy from Georgia. Like, he's a dude. I like know his address. He's just a person. But sort of like, again, viewing that as like, okay, I understand that you feel important. You feel like this guy is important. I'm not going to tell you you're wrong, but we're also going to acknowledge that that's just a dude who lived. I know you had written in your notes that you at first like weren't really taken with Al Freeman Jr.'s portrayal of Malcolm X.
Yeah, I don't know. There's just something... I think there's something about his look. Like, he just kind of looked a little too, I don't know what it is, waifish, or there's something something slim about him that I didn't, because I think of Malcolm X as a pretty powerful figure. And it seemed like we were kind of getting this guy who was a little bit slight and paranoid. And Malcolm X was paranoid. Like, I think, I'm pretty sure that's just a fact of
a well-understood fact of his life. Yeah. Rightfully so.
Yeah. But it sort of felt like when we were first introduced to him, that was the extent of his character. And so for a little while, I was like, this guy is not a great Malcolm X. But then as soon as we saw him speaking and preaching, I guess you would say, I was like, oh, this guy actually is really good. He's bringing a lot to the role.
Yeah, exactly. Like, he does it. I don't know how I feel about like him just talking to Alex Haley, but once he is doing the speeches, you're like, I feel like I'm walking. Because you can just look up Malcolm X speeches and compare them to Freeman's performance.
Mm-hmm.
Fun fact I found, Al Freeman Jr. Is in the Spike Lee Malcolm X documentary biopic, whatever, from 1992. Mm-hmm. But that's Denzel Washington as Malcolm X. Al Freeman plays Elijah Muhammad in that.
Oh.
So he's like played the spectrum of members of the nation, important members of the Nation of Islam.
That's interesting.
But yeah, I thought he was okay. I also did not know that, at least in some points of his life, Malcolm X was a redhead. I was like, oh, that's interesting. He talks about that and like how his grandfather was white, and how he's frustrated in that aspect of his bloodline and how he wants to like scrub that out because it feels bad to him that he hates that that's part of his history.
Yeah.
Anyways, we get away from that scene. And we go to a nice fancy dinner party. If you thought that rich white people were no longer like out here doing their racist thing in the 1960s, you were incorrect, because Alex is introduced to a woman who's running this party, I think. And she's like, oh, I was reading that Jimmy Baldwin earlier. And I was like, oh, yay, James Baldwin. Because this is the part of like the civil rights history that at least I know a little bit about. And, you know, it's pretty cool that she's like name dropping this and not being explicitly racist to him at first. And, you know, most of the hired help here is white. So you're like, oh, this is fine. Like, you know, kind of being brought into the masquerade of it.
Yeah.
But once he goes into like a corner and he starts talking to the woman who he spends a lot of this episode with, they start talking about like have a great conversation about how he's the designated second.
Mm-hmm.
Because they invited her to this party to be the token black person. But they can't just have one because that's tokenism. So he's, and then he like finishes her sentence. He's like, I'm the designated second. She's like, you got it.
Yeah.
And I just liked their back and forth. It's really great to see like educated, like really well-learned like black women in the series now, because we've just like had so much time where they've been relegated to the roles of, you know, obviously plenty of like educated women in this series, but more like this one's the wife and her relationship is how she loves this guy. And at least in this scene, it felt more like Richards was like a bit more, she's independent, you know, it's a different era and she's not defining herself by a man as much.
Sure.
Trying to, at least.
Yeah.
And he's like, no, I want you to be my girlfriend. Please, please, please. And, like, tries to flirt with her and all that.
Yeah, there. I guess we can talk about their courtship and sort of cover that aspect of the episode.
Yeah, if you thought that Haley was like mature now and he's no longer like an awkward womanizer, you were incorrect.
Yeah, I think we see him act in ways that are pretty similar to the previous episode. So when he and Odile first like go back to her apartment, he's being very forward and like talking about how he wants his coffee, and she's like, you're just talking about the coffee, right? And he's like, sure,
sweet, hot and black.
Yeah. And he he's pretty charming, like, you know, I think much more so than the actor who was portraying Alex Haley in the first episode, James Earl Jones. It's sort of like, okay, I can see how this guy, you know, is putting the moves on someone and kind of getting their guard down. But then Odile keeps him at a distance and sets some boundaries and is like, I don't have space in my life to do this. And also, you know, I don't believe in one night stands or whatever. Mm-hmm. So they end up having a courtship and basically dating, and he like cooks for her and stuff. And then there's this scene where she like puts the toothbrush on the table and he's like, oh, I'm having sex tonight.
they're fighting at dinner and she's like, I'm leaving. I don't want to be at dinner with you anymore. And then she like gets up and I was starting to type notes about like, damn, he whiffed it again. And then she like puts down her little makeup bag and like, yeah, it has like her hairbrush and her toothbrush. And he's like, oh,
yeah.
So silly.
But so their, you know, their relationship is, it's nice. I think they generally support each other, but it just ends up being a similar story to what happened to Alex Haley before, where he's kind of like going through all the motions of being with this woman, and he's good at them because he's a smart guy and a romantic mm-hmm. guy, and he knows what to say. And she even calls him on one of his lines and she's like, is that one of the things you wrote in the letters for the other sailors? And he's like, yeah, well, yeah, it yes. is. But then ultimately he just kind of stops paying attention to her as his career progresses and as he starts to research his genealogy and his roots. And it sort of ends in this scene where she's like, hey, I finally got my PhD. He's like, oh my God, when? And she's like, it was like a month ago and you didn't.
I defended my dissertation a month ago and I told you and you acknowledged it. You don't remember that?
Right. And so, and she's basically packing her stuff while he's packing his stuff to go to Africa. And she's like, okay, this is done. I'm leaving. And he's like, wait, 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 come to the airport, say goodbye there. And she says, no, 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 I'm saying goodbye, goodbye. I'm leaving you. And I don't know. I had the same issue with it that I had with the way that Alex Haley was left in the previous episode, where we just move on so fast to him, like, going to Africa and doing the roots stuff that I think unintentionally the episode has this message of like, but he was doing the right thing because he's going to write roots.
Yeah, man, that's the sort of like background thing that I've been thinking about throughout the Alex Haley stuff. And throughout a lot of roots, honestly, and especially Next Generations, is this constant reminder that like these men, especially, we know are going to go on to do great things. So when they put their family and life behind, it's okay, because we the viewer have hindsight bias and know that like that autobiography is going to go on to become a worldwide bestseller and Roots is going to be an incredibly important text and like all this stuff. So, you know, kind of like paints this picture that it was okay in his life to put all of that, his like romance and love and family, behind him because he focused on sort of his genealogy and made that the like obsessive focus in his life.
And there's just not really a moment where we see him either hold himself accountable or be held accountable, really, for letting that relationship fall apart. And basically, I don't know that I would say he was using her, but he certainly was not like in love with her in the way that he claimed to be. And there's never really a moment where he like comes to terms with that or recognizes that, because we're whisked away to tell the story of Roots. And that, I think, is something that bugged me about this and about his relationship in the previous episode as well.
Yeah. I felt it in the background of all of the scenes in the Gambia where I was like, oh, he did just like get into a bad breakup and all this. So like, are we okay with that? Are we going to just like smile and wave past that? And I think part of the truth, we don't know the full life of Alex Haley, obviously, but part of it is just maybe that's how he was, where he was like, all right, I don't have time in life to focus on relationships anymore. Clearly, I keep fucking this up, and I'm going to just move on and make something of my life. Because he says, like, you know, when they're sitting in bed at the beginning of the episode, she asks him what he's so afraid of. He always talks like he's afraid of dying. And he says, I'm afraid of specifically of dying without knowing who I was meant to be.
Right.
Which, I mean, very relatable, honestly.
True, yeah.
And just a common fear of young people, especially young like writers. It's like, what's my like grand calling as a creative type? Mm-hmm. But a great line that she has, because I think, again, Odile like gets kind of a better rep than like the nanny Branch, because yeah, I she agree. Has a PhD. She's probably, hopefully, maybe going to be fine. Like, she's got a good degree and like a yeah, and she's incredibly sure. smart.
She doesn't but, need Alex Haley in her life. Sure.
Exactly, yeah. exactly. But when she's breaking up with him, she says something like, "Contrary to the stereotype, we have terrible rhythm. At least with each other, we weren't meant to like." Beat our drums together with in our lives. We're both cool people. We're just both too ambitious to stay together.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's kind of what separates them. It's like both of us want to devote ourselves to work, but they're not. We don't have the same work. So this was never going to work. I think that kind of like ends this note better than his previous relationship ended on.
Right, where it's like you forgot Christmas with your wife and kids.
And yeah, and yeah. he doesn't have kids with this one, as we understand it. So right. it's like okay, this is a bad relationship. And we're moving on to his. Like major works of his life.
Mm-hmm.
But to roll it back a bit, the sort of second act, kind of out of left field, I think in theory, if you were like making a tighter cut of Roots, this would be entirely cuttable, but it's so interesting and buck wild that I would really hate to miss all of this.
I was sort of thinking, honestly, that this, in another world, this whole episode is its own miniseries of like,
yeah, dig more into all of these things.
Yeah, Alex Haley's professional career.
Yes.
Yeah.
Because it even though it's like and you know over 90 minutes long, all of these like act stories feel pretty rushed.
Mm-hmm.
He gets a phone call from his publicist, who I wrote in my notes looks like Don Knotts meets the guy who is in charge of New York. What the fuck is his name? I can't find it in my notes.
Bill de Blasio.
Bill de Blasio. He looks like sure. Don Knotts' Bill de Blasio.
Okay.
And he's like, hey, I got you an interview with Rockwell. And James Earl Jones like gets up and jumps. And he's like, whoa, Norman Rockwell, the guy who like paints like yeah, white
what am
people?
I, what am I supposed to talk to that guy about?
And he's like, no, you idiot. The other Rockwell, the leader of the American, George Lincoln Rockwell, the head of the American Nazi Party. And then the music is like, dun, dun, dun.
And then he calls yep, Alex yep. Haley and is like, hey, are you Jewish? And Alex Haley's like, no, I'm, what do you say? I'm Methodist or
no,
something?
No, sir, like I'm Methodist.
Oh, my God.
He's like, okay, in that case, I'll see you tomorrow at 8 o'clock or yeah. whatever. He's like,
and so then he goes to the guy's house. And when he shows up, the Nazi guy's like, okay, but you are black, so why didn't you tell me that?
Why did you come here? No, just I want to dig into this whole moment a little bit more because this scene is like so much.
Yep.
He goes up to the house. It's this like big ass mansion, just
we
covered.
Start,
in
we fade in on like a close up of a swastika flag.
Yeah, you know where yeah. the hell you are. Right. It's 1960, whatever. There's a swastika. There's several, and there's all these guards, and they let him in, and they're all looking kind of confused. And he's like, I'm here to speak with Mr. Rockwell. And the chair is turned around like he's a fucking cartoon supervillain.
Yeah.
And he turns, and who is it? It's Marlon Brando.
right.
Acclaimed American actor Marlon Brando as George Lincoln Rockwell is maybe the most ridiculous piece of stunt casting in all of Roots.
Yeah.
Holy shit. I don't have a lot of familiarity with Marlon Brando. I've obviously like I've seen The Godfather, I've seen Apocalypse Now, and I remarked to you that like, you know, at this point in his career, he's like in a lot of his work, he's pretty checked out. In this, he's like pretty active, like he's doing, you know, his whole monologue. But everything I've seen him in, he's like been in a chair that turns around, and then he's 3 seconds from dying, and he's like speaking in a death rattle. That's just every Marlon Brando performance I've seen sure. is like that.
Yeah.
So he's talking to Haley and kind of being like, I didn't know you were black. And he's like, I told you I'm not Jewish. I'm not. And he's like, you know, we call you N-words. I honestly can't quote anything he says because he just nonstop is like an amalgamation of all of the racist characters we've seen in this series. But I think what's fascinating to like get past the comedy of this is just thinking about what the American Nazi Party looked like in the 1960s. Where it's like very opulent, very like self-aggrandizing and proud, and like mm-hmm. they claim to be very well researched, talking about Hitler and talking about the like history of modern anthropology, and you know, I think it's incredible that Haley goes up to this guy and is like, yeah, there's like science that says that we're all the same, like our color or skin doesn't matter, And he's like, that science is nonsense. I have my men looking at that. I have my people searching for discreditation that all people are equal. Mm-hmm. I'm pretty sure that black people are worse. And then he's like, you're denying all of the incredible like advancements in American society done by African Americans. And he's like, yeah, horses could have done that. Like, it's hard. I can't even imagine. Like, I don't know what. How do you, as like Marlon Brando, like do this scene? It's just like, you have to be the worst. You just have to play it and play it entirely seriously. It's a weird, weird moment in this like otherwise pretty straight faced episode.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, I think it portrays this odd, aspect of this story of the period during and after the civil rights movement. Just thinking about like how there was an American Nazi party that called themselves Nazis in the 60s is kind of mind blowing. And there were two things that I was struck by in sort of the points that he was making and just the sort of accoutrement around him. Because the first thing is that you think about how closely he's tying his Nazism to American nationalism. Like, he has a portrait of George Washington in his office that's looming over Alex Haley.
You mean it's by accident?
No. What do you mean?
No. I meant, like, do you think it's an incident that they put George Washington behind the white supremacist?
No, I don't. I think that's entirely on purpose.
Right. That was a leading question.
Sorry. Oh, I see what you're saying. Yeah, I think it's a really striking image to see Alex Haley sitting under that portrait and to basically say, like, I've been called N-word many times, but this is the first time I'm being paid for it. And looming behind him is a man who some consider the father of the country and who also was a slaveholder, right?
Right.
And so that's a pretty powerful image. And you think about the guy's name is George Lincoln Rockwell, which I would have to assume in some way relates to George Washington and Abraham Lincoln. But maybe that's not the case. It just feels that that's true.
Yeah.
And it reminded me of this like short documentary called A Night at the Garden, which is this recovered footage of this American Nazi meeting that happened in Madison Square Garden in the 1930s.
Oh, yeah.
Where Madison Square Garden was like filled with people who were Nazi sympathizers and I guess were considered or called themselves Nazis. And at the stage, at the front of everything, there were these huge floor-to-ceiling portraits of George Washington and the American flag. And it makes you think about how, like, all of the aspects of Nazism about sort of wanting for there to be a master race has been present in American history. The idea of expanding. I mean, I always... In my class, when I talk about the Nazis and introduce the idea of Lebensraum, which means living space, and that's sort of the justification for Nazi expansionism, is like, we want living space for our people, how that feels and sounds very similar to Manifest Destiny, which is the American idea of like, you know, it's our destiny to expand westward regardless of who lives there. So I was struck by that in this scene. And then the other thing that I was struck by is when Rockwell is talking to Alex Haley and basically says that he and Malcolm X like have the same goal.
Yeah, that's, again, I was going to read a little bit from his Wikipedia article, because the relationship between Rockwell and the Black Nationalist parties is really fascinating, because he's kind of, you can go on, say what you were saying about that.
Well, because, you know, I think If you think about Roots the Next Generation, I was sort of trying to go through in my head and think about like what is Roots about? What's Roots the Next Generation about? And I really think that anybody who watches Roots needs to watch Roots the Next Generation, and the two things shouldn't be separated from each other. Because to me, Roots the Next Generation tells a very important story about the both the persistence of white supremacy and the ways that it shifts and exerts itself, and people exert it through law and also through extra legal means. But then the other story of Roots the Next Generation is about like different African-American leaders thinking about what are we supposed to do about that problem, right? So you have Tom Harvey at the very, very beginning, who has this sort of like Reconstruction idea that, okay, now we have the right to vote. I can leverage my right to vote for politicians to like cater to my constituency now that we are a constituency. So everything will be fine. It doesn't work out that way because he's disenfranchised. You have Will Palmer, who's like, I'm going to run a business and sort of, you know, carve out my life and provide for my family that way through capitalism. You have Simon Haley, who's like, who follows the Du Bois idea of, I'm going to educate myself, become part of the talented 10th, and help people in that way. You have Alex Haley, who's like, I'm just going to do my own thing. There are these new national forms of media. There's magazines, there's television, there's a national popular culture that provides an avenue for someone like him to make a name for himself, make a celebrity, make himself into a celebrity, and tell a story. And maybe that is a sort of path to equality. Who knows?
Yeah.
And then the other thing that's shared in this episode is the Nation of Islam idea of like, it's not possible.
We should just separate.
Right. Maybe we should just separate. And
which Rockwell loves.
Rockwell's like, I agree. Yeah, there can't be an intermingling of the races. So yeah, black nationalists, let's agree that we should live in separate societies. That sounds good to me. And it's such an odd moment of, you know, Malcolm X being like, all white people are demons. And literally, that's like a belief of the Nation of Islam. That's not like him, you know, exaggerating. That is a textual belief of the Nation of Islam.
Oh yeah, that there is a demon within all of them that they can suppress, yeah, but it's there, right, and it can't be taken away. Yeah,
right.
Like, when the journalist is like at one of his interviews and he's like, notice this guy's only writing about when I talk about violence, and like a guy gets up to fight him and he's like, no, don't touch him, like it's the evil inside of him, it's not him, he's just a guy writing, right, he can't hurt you, you're stronger than him, that kind of thing. Yeah,
right. And Malcolm X is saying all those things. And you have someone like Rockwell who's like, sure, yeah. I mean, I think that you're lesser than me, and I hate you, and I don't want to be anywhere near you. And they're both like, okay, cool. Well, then we'll separate. It's just interesting to see in the wake of the push for integration as part of the civil rights movement that you have people of both races saying, but maybe not. Maybe we're going to choose to segregate, but even more than we were before.
I think something important, though, that the show does to differentiate them a little bit is it acknowledges at least somewhat that both of those worldviews are a little bit fatalistic. Like, if we can't, we're never going to figure this out, let's separate.
Yeah.
But one of them is about self-defense and the other one is about self-preservation, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. And while those sound similar, they're actually very different, because like Nazism is about like, if we finally scrub out all of the things that we consider other and different from us, like the Jews and the black people and everyone else that's not exactly Aryan, then we will have a more perfect union. And then like the black nationalist idea of like, the only way we will survive is if we leave or we kill a lot of them. And it's just, you know, these two frustrating like poles, but one of them is in the show's view a lot more like reasonable and can be like co-opted
For certain, yeah.
Right, you know.
Yeah.
It's not so much about hating the other person, it's about recognizing that the system is stacked against you, so why would you work within the system?
Right. And I think that's a problem. I think because you have people like Rockwell sort of saying like, yeah, we agree, you have people who will end up conflating black nationalists with someone like a Nazi and say like, well, it's reverse racism.
It's exactly. Like they're
just as racist as the Nazis. And it's like, no.
Nope.
Like what you're saying, that nuance is really important. It's about just the practicality of like, how can we survive? And maybe the way to survive is to just get the hell out of Dodge.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. I sent you a photo of George Lincoln Rockwell. It's actually kind of fascinating how little Brando looks like him, but still performs the like mannerisms of him pretty well. And I was reading his Wikipedia page, and pretty much everything that they said in this episode lines up with his real opinions. You know, he was a Holocaust denier. He says in the episode that the Holocaust was the photos of like Jews being taken to internment camps was innocent Germans in what was I think I can't remember the name of the conflict or whatever. But he's basically like, that's all fake. It's all that stuff. Martin Luther King, he said, was a tool for Jewish communists wanting to rule the white community. He blamed the civil rights movement on Jewish people. He regarded Hitler as a white savior. Just he's like the all in all the time, all the way. Mm-hmm. Full-blown 100% Nazi. Yeah. He was also killed in 1967 by one of the members of his own party, which is something. But again, like we were talking about the KKK a couple episodes ago and how one of the fascinating things about the way they portray them is like, yeah, they are a political party somewhat and a hate group and all of that. But also like Haley asks him, where do you get your income from? And he's like, well, you know, membership fees and, you know, outfits and rallies. We do donations and then we do these things called hate nannies and... I know, I'm not going to repeat any of that, but he, like, sings, he says, like, do you want to hear one of the songs?
Oh, my God.
And he's like, I'm telling you, it's going to be really fucked up. And Haley's like, yeah, sure. And it's just, it's very fucked up. Also, last thing, I think it's great watching, not great, but it's a really powerful performance from James Earl Jones as he goes from, like, I'm going to court this crazy person in front of me like an adult to, like, I can't stop crying because he literally wants to, like, murder me right now. I can tell. Yeah. And everybody that I've ever known and loved. So he, like, in the last touch that they have, Rockwell is spraying the room because a black person in his room and he's spraying it to get rid of the smell. It's just, this is where I was like, please cut the scene. Like, this is when we bordered from, like, wow, Nazis are really fucked up to, like, please stop showcasing this. I don't need to see this anymore.
Yeah.
In case you thought that like Roots TNGs doesn't like it pulls punches more than the original Roots does, it's like no, they just do it in different ways. Right. Instead of watching people get whipped, we watch people get killed in different ways. But anyways, that's enough about the Nazi Party. That is a part of Haley's life. I am kind of like curious to read what his version of these events is, like in the piece that he ended up writing, mm-hmm. or how that manifested, but. Yeah. That's basically the extent of that. And then he has another meeting with Malcolm X where he's talking about, like, I have all these royalties. I know you had them going to the royalties from the book going to a mosque. I want them instead to go to my wife as soon as possible. Because mm-hmm. like you were saying, Malcolm X, pretty paranoid dude, knows at this point in 1965 that he's going to be assassinated.
Yeah. Well, and also the other important thing about that is that he's distancing himself from the Nation of Islam at this point. And it's sort of... his views are changing kind of substantially because he even mentions in the scene like, yeah, I don't think all, it's like very across the plate, but he's like, yeah, I don't think all white people have a demon inside them anymore. I think maybe some of them are good. Anyway.
That's my bad.
Yeah. And so we're sort of like Martin Luther King in a lot of ways, Malcolm X is assassinated before we see the like next phase of his thinking. And you know, we'll never know exactly what that ends up looking like, but we're catching him in the middle of transitioning away from the Nation of Islam, beginning to think about the world in a different way. And then he's assassinated for it.
Yeah. It's very scary. I'm like rewatching a little bit of the assassination scene here. Just the way that like the sort of tension is diverted by these two men, like one putting his hand in another guy's pocket. And as they freak out, you know, Malcolm X is trying to do the thing he does, which is that he mediates conflict in his own groups. And then two other men like run up to him, pull guns on him. And he's killed pretty quickly. Again, that was just very spark notes-y where it's like, and then he dies. Anyways, moving right along. We got more Alex Haley stuff. And, you know, this thing I keep mentioning that Roots does where it, like, has these moments of, like, intense violence as sort of act breaks. And then it's like, okay, blink your eyes, and here we go. Now it's time for genealogy adventures. It's just like, how much time do we need to focus on that before we get into, you know, now Haley is back in Henning, Tennessee with his aunt or his grandmother, mm-hmm. whatever, and talking about his life. Mm-hmm. But to get to the final stuff here, he talks to his family and remembers all of the different African words that they taught him and wants to learn the identity of the African, the first person from his family who was brought to the United States. He's doing some digging. He goes to the House of Records and meets a wonderful old white woman who is one of my favorite white characters in this show, because mm-hmm. he's like, I'm looking through the census and I can't find anything. And she's like, census is stupid. Tax records are more accurate because everyone tracks their money and that's the way better way to find your family. Mm-hmm. And she has this hysterical moment where he's like, I'm looking for a Harvey. And she's like, oh, I knew so many Harveys. There was like the New York Harveys and the Washington Harveys. Mm-hmm. And she's like, oh, you're probably not looking for any of the white ones, are you? <He's> like, I'm not. And then she's like, genealogy is so interesting. Did you know that my like great 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 grandfather is William the Conqueror? Isn't genealogy cool? And he's like, yeah, my ancestors probably enslaved. And she's like, okay. She's like, what?
Yeah.
But she helps him find Tom, and then he goes to one of the, not the Harvey, like the Reynolds guy, the person who was Tom's owner, I think, at one point when he was still enslaved. And is that not accurate, or is it, how far back?
I think it's the Reynolds who that was Kunta Kinte,
yeah, because he finds that, you're right. And he goes to the ancestor's house, and it's just so funny because it's like this really great house, and this guy is like, I'd love to help you. And then he's like, but why do you need so much information? And he's like, your people probably owned, like, your ancestors probably owned my ancestors. That's why I want to know this.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, I guess I can help you, but I don't know what to find. And
the guy gets like pretty rude with Alex Haley.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah.
Because he's like, whatever, your genealogy doesn't matter. Why do you care so much? It's probably just going to go back to enslaved people. Like, so what?
Right. And he just doesn't want to confront the reality of it. But then I thought it was pretty moving and believable. The thing that gets him to change his tune, which is where Alex Haley is like, you know, probably the place where all these records are of enslaved people would be wherever the records are of like the horses in the stables. Because
property,
they were thought of in the same way. And then the guy's like, fuck. Okay, yeah.
Okay, thank you. You found it.
You're right. Oof. And then it was interesting. I don't know about this moment where the guy's like, I'm sorry. And then Alex Haley's like, it's okay. You didn't do anything wrong.
Didn't he do something wrong? Well, he was extremely unhelpful. But also, yeah, that's the sort of like, it was my ancestors, not me argument, right?
Yeah.
But yeah, it's weird that the show kind of like becomes like a fun romp mystery show from here.
Yeah, the tone is definitely a little light.
It gets super light, and he goes to Annapolis. He goes to the Historical Society, and they're like, I don't know how we're gonna find you the stuff you want. And this is kind of like wholesome scene where he looks out over the water and hears like African singing. I guess it's supposed to just be like. You know, he knows where he's trying to go now. It's sort of like hitting you over the head with that. He goes to the UN with his publicist. He goes, he like sees a random African man in the UN, and he's like, hey, do you know these words? And the guy's like, he thinks the guy doesn't speak English, and the guy's like, excuse me, sir, I don't understand what the words mean. And he's like, oh. And then fucking his publicist laughs at him because he's like, why did you think that guy would just know what country your family's from? Why did you do that? And then he finds another awesome character who is this like anthropologist. Mm-hmm. He meets the guy in his house, and he has all this cool like he has like books and maps, and he has an instrument. The instrument that comes from the Gambia, he has one just like in a cabinet. I thought this guy was great because he's yet another Chats alum. It's the dad from My Big Fat Greek Wedding. clearly trying not to do a Greek accent and failing. Like, he's trying to do a vaguely European accent.
Yeah.
Michael Constantine is the actor's name. And I was excited to see him again because I like My Big Fat Greek Wedding a lot. And he's this guy who's like, yeah, you were saying the word wrong. That's the reason that the guy in the UN didn't understand you. It's this. And he shows him how to play the stringed instrument. And he's like, yeah, your ancestors are probably from the Gambia. He points on a map. It's somewhere near Senegal. We continue the search. James Earl Jones is happy. He goes, he has the breakup with his lady friend. And then one of the most touching scenes of the series, I think, he's at the airport with Simon Haley, his dad, mm-hmm. and they see a copy of the autobiography of Malcolm X in the airport. And he's like, you know, dad, I wrote that. And like, people like that. And he's like, yeah, I read it. I like rented it from the library and read it. Majan, did you interpret this as his dad not actually having read it?
No.
You believed him and were just like, he read it? Because I thought that you could kind of understand this as like, he says he read it, but then he's like, well, like, I don't know. I felt like there was a little bit of ambiguity there.
No, I think it's an odd, I don't know. It's strange to me because Simon Haley didn't strike me prior to this point as a character who like struggled to speak his mind and say what he feels.
Yeah.
You know? And so we're sort of seeing him live long enough to see himself become the villain, kind of. Mm-hmm. Like he was this like, you know, in the thick of it with the everyday person trying to make the world a better place. And then as he gets older, he becomes like a little more starched shirt, stuffy academic guy.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
So I think it's just that he like for so long has been disapproving of Alex Haley's choices. And so in this scene where he like struggles to compliment the book, I think what he's struggling with is that like he's having to admit that he's been wrong for so long for Alex Haley's entire life, right? Because the path that he set out for his son was like, you need to go to school and that's where you're going to learn to be an academic and get your PhD just like I did. And that's the path.
But when he looks at it, he says like it, or he talks about having read it. He's like, it read like a long academic text, almost like a thesis.
Yeah.
Oh, you basically wrote a thesis, didn't you? You did the thing I wanted you to do, just not in the rigid format that I was thinking of it in.
Yeah. And so I think he's, his withholding here in this scene is just, he's like filled with regret and he basically wants to say that he's sorry and just doesn't have the words for it and doesn't know how to do it. And he sort of knows that he's like missed out on all this time with his son. And constantly he's like, your brother's a senator now or whatever. Be more like your brother. And all this time, Alex Haley was becoming someone that he could be really proud of.
Yeah. And it's very touching. I think the main reason that I was like questioning whether or not he read it was that when Alex buys him a copy of the book and is like, he's like, I already read it. He's like, I know, but I want you to have this copy. And he sees that on the first page of it, it says, like, you know, I always will love my father, even though...
Well, that's Alex Haley writes that in it. Right before.
Oh, he had written that in the copy?
Yeah, as soon as he buys it, he, like, signs it and writes that for his dad.
Okay, so I just misread that, I guess. But I also, and then just the emotional payoff that as he leaves for the runway, Simon Haley's like, that guy, my son, that's my son. He wrote this book. And you just see the airline attendant be like, okay, that's pretty neat.
Yeah. It was a little like, who knows if it happened that way. It's satisfying in a sort of movie TV way.
Yes. But
I'm glad that that's where Simon Haley's character ended up.
Yeah. He had his reconciliation somewhat with his dad.
Yeah.
I thought that we go to Yundum, Gambia. We're in April of 1967 now. And I think this is a pretty good portrayal of Africa as like this beautiful sort of, they're at like a, I don't know if it's a hotel or like what, some sort of important building, but it's gorgeous and it's like kind of summery and everyone's like dressed really nicely. And he's with all these guys and some of them speak English and they explain to him that you can't just go to the village that the Kinte line comes from, even though we recognize that name. He's like, oh my God, you guys know him? And he's like, yeah, but like most of them are not literate, and you're not going to find your records in paper there. You're going to get it orally. And he has this cute moment where he's like, oh, that's why my aunts talk about records, is because that's always how it worked. Mm-hmm. Was the idea of like writing down records was something that honestly has been around for a very long time, but was popularized in terms of genealogy by roots. If you think about it, like people like in terms of like seeking out your own written genealogy was a thing that he like was a big advocate for.
Sure.
But sure, there's always been like written records and stuff. It's just more like once you go past a certain point, you're not going to find it in writing. You're going to find it in the mind of elders. Mm-hmm. So they tell him, like, we don't know if we're going to be able to find it. It's going to take you a couple weeks. We know you don't have a lot of money. Too bad. He was woken up at 3 a.m. and they're like, yeah, there's a boat going there tomorrow. We're going to meet the griot, the guy who is like the oral history leader of Jufre.
Mm-hmm. Basically a guy whose whole role in the society is to memorize hundreds of years of names and history, which is
fascinating.
Deeply fascinating to think about that's a thing in human societies.
It's part of the reason why the beginning of the Bible is kind of boring.
Yeah,
is because it's also a written history where it's like, you know, all this stuff happened, and then this guy had a son, and this guy had a son, and then they had three sons, and then he had a daughter, and they had two sons, and he had a daughter.
And the anthropology guy says that doesn't he say that the Bible started as an oral tradition before it was written down?
Before it was written down, yes. That's why it was important at the time. It was one of the earliest written traditions of its type. You know, we think about it as just purely like the story of Christ, but it's also a lot of it is the genealogy and the importance of that stuff. And so they arrive in Jufre, and I thought the scene was honestly just magical, like watching the guy translate to him. I did think it was funny though that like Haley gets kind of bored.
Yeah.
He's like, it's been hours. He just keeps talking. Yeah. And he's like, I know.
That's what I like about Alex Haley. He's kind of a dork.
Yeah, he gets all the way. He has this like blessed opportunity.
I'm so sleepy though.
I want to go to, can we stop? And because they're like, yeah, the elder knows all the history, but he memorized it start to finish. So you can't ask him to start in the middle.
Yeah.
So we got to start like 1,000 years ago. Sorry. And he just goes and goes, and all the village is listening and everybody's paying attention. And then he's like, I'm done. I don't want to do this anymore. And then he's like, and then there's a guy named Omero, and he had four kids, and one of them was Kunta. And he's like, wait, hold on.
he almost goes past it.
He
says it, and then he's like, Kunta Kinte went to, you know, cut wood
the
for
king's
a drum
country,
and we never saw him again. And that's when Alex Haley, after 30 seconds of a story about Kunta Kinte, that's when he wakes up and he's like, wait. And he didn't have his notebook out.
Yeah, I'm so confused. Like, what? I don't know what the directorial choice was here. Maybe just for the comedy of him being like, hold on, repeat that. Let me get my notebook.
I think so.
But why would you go here and not write all of this down? I thought the whole point was you were trying to get this info.
Right, and that's been like a thing. It's been a motif of him interacting with people throughout the episode, is he always has his notebook.
Yes.
On hand. So it was kind of dorky.
The only part, it portrays that as if everything before Kunta Kinte doesn't matter. And he's like, whatever. Okay, this guy though. And it's like, no, there's a lot of history that they have before that. It's okay.
Yeah, that's a good point.
So he realizes that, and he has the guy repeat it over and over and over again. And then he like cheers and says, Kunta Kinte, I found you, the African. That's your name. I'm happy. Very triumphant. Again, this is the scene that most feels compromised by the fact that it's probably not true. mm-hmm. And he goes on a boat to go home. And right before he does, someone comes up to him and goes, Mr. Kinte, I'm Mr. Kinte. We're family. And he cries and he hugs him because he realizes that they're relatives.
Yeah, it was a touching moment.
Totally. Very touching. And he takes, and then as he's riding away on the boat, we get flashbacks to every member of the family in order, starting with LeVar Burton, Kunta Kinte, down to Kizzy, to Chicken George, Tom and Cynthia, yeah, Will and Bertha.
It was really odd that they did a split screen of Kizzy and Tom Harvey.
Was it Kizzy and George or Kizzy and Tom?
It was Kizzy and Tom, the white guy, Tom.
Oh, yeah, where it's like, no, we don't need that part of the history. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's there, like, right. It's genealogically there, but it's like you guys really can't just center Kizzy as like the part of the generation that matters.
Yeah.
And then we get this like nice little capper on the series, which is Alex Haley in 1978 talking to us in a gorgeous set that I really want to visit. That's like all wood, like a crusty couch. And he's like, "Hey guys, searching for your own genealogy is important." I love that this is a call to action as much as it is like, here's the themes of roots. Because he's like, ask the oldest living members of your family to share as much about their history as they can. And then he says something like, if you ask them, they're probably going to know way more than you think. And the reason they never told it is because nobody asked. So you need to be the first person to ask because they probably know a lot.
Yeah.
Which I thought was nice.
And then the other piece of advice he has is to hold family reunions.
Hold family reunions. Keep the family, the legacy alive. Make sure everybody knows it. Make sure the little kids know it. Keep the words. Keep the titles, because in this time where we're more divided than ever, nothing can take us away from our family.
Yeah.
Just like, nice. That's the point of roots.
Yeah. So it, you know, ultimately it's this really feel good ending of he found kind of pride and a sense of identity and who he is through knowing his roots. Mm-hmm. And like you were saying, it's really hard to just accept that ending because of the context of what's probably true. Which is, at least from what I was reading and understanding, along with some of the like kind of inaccuracies that we've talked about before, from what I understand, the griot that he talked to was like not a real griot. And
damn, really?
Yeah. And the story that he heard from the griot was like just the story that he had been asking about repeated back to him to basically tell him like what he wanted to hear. So when he had the story confirmed of like, oh my god, those are all the things that I said, it's like, yeah, that's because it traveled by word of mouth to this fake griot who just repeated the story back to you.
Yeah.
And that sucks. It really sucks. Because it takes away, I think. Well, I don't know. I guess that's the question. Like, does that ultimately undermine the message or the idea of roots?
Well, good question. I think that definitely affects the way we think about it in real life. Like, if you research this, maybe I would like a sort of like re-examination of this moment in Alex Haley's like search. Where it's like, here's what actually happened, and just get the full truth of that as an account from someone. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it had to be like this for the sake of a TV show ending cleanly. It's disappointing that didn't work out accurately for him. But also the truth of the matter is he would have been extremely, extremely like one in a million lucky if this actually worked out the way he said it did. Where like this guy happened to be the right person to add. This is the correct griot. They got you to the right part of Jufre, and this person actually knows your family. Like, that's not as easy as the series makes it out to be, because right. So much language gets shifted around. I mean, they even talk about, like, the Michael Constantine character is like, you got the accent wrong and you told them a different word, because like words don't translate really cleanly. So you might have, even your translator might have been bad. Like, there's so many things that could have gone in the way from him finding this accurately.
Right.
So it doesn't surprise me that the early like couple of family members are wrong. But I think part of the reason that he stops at Kunta Kinte is once they come to America, there are definitely at least written records of everyone. Because all of the ones who were enslaved are in this property.
I think it's like Tom Harvey. I think it's like the Harvey family forward is accurate from what I read.
Right. And everything back is either inaccurate or oral only. And yeah. So you can't build past that very far.
Yeah. I guess it's just a question of like, the actual truth of reality and the sort of narrative truth of the story, and thinking about like if Roots had been presented to us as a work of fiction whole cloth, we wouldn't be worrying about this at all, and we could just sort of be talking hypothetically about the idea of like finding your roots and talking about this story that is a very realistic portrayal of generations of African American people throughout history. I don't know. I just don't know how to feel about the fact that it's been passed off as truthful and as nonfiction, but then turns out to have like pretty heavily fictionalized elements. And also, again, some elements that were plagiarized. I can't help but have that kind of influence the way that I think about Roots and it as a work. But at the same time, I think we've gotten a lot of value out of talking about the stories of these people, regardless of if they really lived or if they lived in the way that it's portrayed in the show. It's an interesting question, I think, of like truth and story truth and, you know, what matters ultimately when you're dealing with something that's like a work of nonfiction, but that has some inventiveness and imagination in it.
Yeah. I think when you're making your own genealogy and you're trying to like map that out, there's a little element of fiction in it that you are writing and contributing to. Right. Because past a certain point, you have to make assumptions about, like, I think this person was this way. There just aren't, it's not math, you know, there aren't hard answers to a lot of this stuff. Mm-hmm. And that's just part of the sort of transient way that history is kept in a lot of cultures, which is frustrating. But ultimately, like, as a text, both the miniseries and the novel that it's based on, I think its goal is less to be a, like, perfectly accurate portrayal of history, and more a sort of like guiding light for people who feel disenfranchised and who feel sort of detached from their genealogy, mm-hmm. to tell them like, this is not as hard as you think it is. It seems really scary to like pull these threads back and back and back. And I know you're going to find stuff you don't like, but you should try to do it and find whatever you can. Whether or not it's exactly accurate is up in the air, but
yeah.
You know, that's why he comes in at the end and is like, you should do this. I'm not the end all be all like perfect person at this. I want other people to do it too and learn what they can.
Mm-hmm.
Almost as if to suggest like, hey, if everyone does this better, then maybe we'll get more accurate records. You know, it's sort of a collaborative sure. history right. too, which right. is important because, you know, 100 Alex Haleys would eventually get to the right person, but one person doing it for the first time is almost never going to get this right.
Yeah, that's fair.
So I think, yeah, like as a sort of moral tale for the viewer and the listener or in the reader, I mean, it succeeds. But yeah, as a historical text, it definitely does not,
mm-hmm.
Which is frustrating, but that's the way it goes. And like you were saying, too, does it detach from the meaning, or like does it make less the meaning of these different characters' stories and adventures and trials if they aren't real? Because I'm certain that all of these characters and these lives happened.
I think it's more so for me, like, it doesn't detract from all of the things that we've talked about in studying these characters and their place in these different historical contexts. Because especially in Roots the Next Generation, well, in both, in Roots and Roots the Next Generation, it felt like we were following people who, if they weren't real, could have been real, and we're dealing with like real issues of the time. More so, I think what it calls into question is the call to action that's given at the end of this episode.
Yes.
Of like, go find your roots. It's going to be great. Because in reality, Alex Haley did not entirely successfully do that to the extent that he either A, thought he did, or B, tried to tell us he did.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So that, I think, is where I'm less on board with what we're taking away from Roots. But in terms of all of the discussions we've had about African American history and about the themes and motifs of the story, I think that those things, regardless of whether or not we're dealing with truthful occurrences, I think that those things are still valuable. And so Roots is still a valuable experience because of that.
Yeah. Separate even from the genealogy stuff, it reminds us that history is not linear. Progress is not linear, especially for African Americans here. And in the time of slavery to the civil rights movement, we see the like increase and decrease of like African-American independence. You know, mm-hmm. it doesn't just improve. It goes all over the place and different spreads out in different ways.
Mm-hmm.
And still does to this day. So, you know, ultimately, I'm really glad that we got to watch it and discuss it and dig into all the good stuff.
Me too.
But that's what we got. I know, Magellan, you did some extracurricular viewing, if you want to talk to that a little bit.
I did, yeah. I will just say one other thing that I thought was an interesting connection about this episode was the fact that Alex Haley is inspired to follow his roots, not because of the years and years of his family telling him all these stories, which he had been taking for granted, but because he meets Malcolm X, and Malcolm X calls himself Malcolm X because he doesn't know what his real family name is.
Yes.
Like, he expressly has no connection to his roots, and the part of his roots that he understands is something that he, like, hates and is ashamed of because it's an act of rape, which is represented by the mm-hmm. color of his skin. And so I thought that that was a way that the Malcolm X stuff was connected to the root stuff that I didn't expect, but that I thought was actually really interesting. But that was the only other thing from the episode we hadn't really talked about.
Oh, for sure.
But anyway, yeah, I was curious about some other roots related media, and so I decided to check a couple things out just to scout it out and let people know if you liked Roots, whether it's worth watching these other things. So I watched the TV movie Roots: The Gift, which came out in 80 something, and then I watched the first episode of the 93 miniseries Alex Haley's Queen.
88, by the way.
88 is Roots: The Gift. So Roots: The Gift, I'll start there, is a TV movie that's set 7 years after episode 2 of Roots. So it starts with the scene where LeVar Burton is portraying Kunta Kinte. He has been captured and he's being whipped and being made to say that his name is Toby. That's like the end of episode 2.
Mm-hmm.
And then it shows you that scene again, and then it's like 7 years later. And so it's this story about Kunta Kinte and Fiddler around Christmas time, where basically they stumble upon a mission that's a couple other characters that are new to the movie are attempting to help some enslaved people escape northward. This is 1775, so they're not mm-hmm. quite yet the Underground Railroad, but it's sort of like a prototypical version of the Underground Railroad. And so the story is ultimately about like them deciding to help with this thing. And I don't want to give away too much of it, but I would say it's pretty, like, there's some heavy stuff and some interesting symbolism that happens in the movie. But overall, I would say, like, it's lighter than the rest of the original series of Roots. And it's pretty optimistic, which I think Roots ultimately is as well, but it's like more optimistic than that because it's a sort of like feel good story. So I was conflicted about that, but I do think that it provides a good beat in the character arc of Fiddler and the character arc of Kunta Kinte, because really when you watch the original series, you go from episode 2 and then you kind of fast forward to episode 3, and now Kunta Kinte is portrayed by a different guy, and it kind of feels like their relationship is significantly different. So this movie provides, I think, a good middle point to sort of see their relationship evolve. And if you liked LeVar Burton and you liked Louis Gossett Jr. and you want to see them hang out again, it's worth watching the movie.
But also has it features a trifecta of Star Trek actors.
Yeah, there's a free African-American man who is portrayed by
Avery Brooks,
who plays Sisko in DS9. Mm-hmm. And then there's like a bounty hunter white lady who's portrayed by the woman who plays Janeway in Voyager. And then LeVar Burton's there. So it's like, this is weird. This is very Star Trek-y.
You say Kate Mulgrew's character and Avery Brooks' character talk to each other at one point?
Yeah, there's a scene where it's just the two of them.
That's delicious.
It's kind of odd. Yeah, so that's Roots the Gift. It's also, I think, fictional, because the way that it presents itself at the beginning is it says based on characters from Roots. Mm-hmm. So Alex Haley also comes in at the beginning and is like, hey, it's me, Alex Haley, again.
hey, kids.
Yeah. So there's also kind of like a part of me that's cynical and thinks that they're like, hey, let's do a Roots thing because that made us some money. But it's okay. But there isn't a ton there, so it's okay that we didn't cover it.
Right.
And then Alex Haley's queen it's a strange thing because so this queen, he writes this book, Queen, later in his life, towards the end of his life. This miniseries is dedicated to him because he's passed away by the time it comes out. And Alex Haley's Queen is about his father's, about Simon Haley's parents and that side of his family, as opposed to his mother's side, which is where the Kunta Kinte story comes from. And Queen is portrayed by Halle Berry, which is the sort of, I don't know if she was a star by that point, actually. So maybe that's
the 90s.
A stunt casting thing. It's like 93, I think.
She's known, not huge, I imagine, but she's definitely like people know who Halle Berry is.
Yeah. But the crux of it is that Halle Berry's character, Queen, she's Alex Haley's grandmother, and she's the daughter of an enslaved woman and the son of the plantation owner who, at least as the miniseries tells it, are in love with each other. So it ends up being this thing where they portray that love in a way that's a lot more uncritical than I was hoping for. Like it really does feel romanticized, the relationship that the two of them have. There's like an extended tender sex scene between them.
Oh.
And you know, he like goes off to war in the Confederacy and he's like, don't worry, I'll be back. And you know, Queen's mom is like, don't ask about your dad, just know that you came from love. And it's like, why? Why? I don't know. I felt very conflicted about it. And then Queen is basically raised in the plantation house with the guy's white daughter, with his white wife. And even though like all the white people talk to her and like consider her enslaved still, she's also brought up to sort of read and be a lady and essentially be as close to his daughter in the eyes of the society as that society will allow. Mm-hmm. So it ends up being, it's just this really, really kind of fraught, weird character and weird situation where Queen clearly like feels at home or has been made to feel at home. She feels a nostalgia for this place. The series definitely portrays plantation Southern society as this like, you know, this nice society where people got along, and sure there were problems and sure there was slavery, but like we loved each other. And I think I think it's trying to show the subtleties of the way in which that style of thinking is like gaslighting and fucked up, mm-hmm. but it ultimately doesn't criticize it enough. And so I think that you could look at Alex Haley's Queen the way that you might look at something like Gone with the Wind or something and think like, oh yeah, I guess the antebellum South actually was okay. And some plantation owners were nice people and maybe it wasn't so bad after all. And that's bad. So ultimately, Alex Haley's Queen is a weird one. And I don't know if I can recommend it.
And again, more weird casting all over the place. Besides Halle Berry, you have Ossie Davis replying once again, but reprising a different role than he did in Roots TNGs. Mm-hmm. I believe you have Madge Sinclair in one of the episodes, who was Belle from Original Roots, is playing a different character. Mm-hmm. So it kind of reads to me like, yeah, we got these people together. Who's still alive from Original Roots? Who can we get to do this new story? It sounds very like 90s feminism to be like, and now we did the Lady Roots story, you know? But yeah. The thematic stuff sounds at least a little interesting, if also kind of difficult to, not exactly perfect, well tackled.
Yeah, I think it covers ground that's not necessarily covered in the Original Roots. This question of like, is it possible for there to be a relationship of love, consensual love between a slaveholder and an enslaved woman?
Yeah.
And it also addresses the question of like, because Queen is so light-skinned that some characters mistake her for being white. Mm-hmm. And so it also addresses this question of like being mixed race and what that was like in antebellum society, being made to feel that you're sort of outside of the white world, but also outside of the black world. And like, mm-hmm. where do you fit and belong? And I don't think that those are like kind of very specific questions that are different than the questions that are addressed in Roots. So if you're interested in that, it's worth deciding for yourself and checking it out for yourself. But I do think from a historian's perspective, the way that it sort of is willing to romanticize the Confederate South,
yeah,
is a problem.
Yes, totally.
Yeah.
Well, was it Ryan Reynolds and Blake Lively? Did you hear about this? They recently tried they were going to do a wedding at a place that they saw that looked really beautiful on Pinterest, and they got there before realizing that they were having a wedding on a slave plantation.
Yeesh. Yeesh.
Yeesh is right. That was recent. So the romanticization, and that was, again, not intentional, but there is definitely like a lot of people who are like, we can reclaim plantations as these like beautiful places, and sort of the Gone with the Windification of like the beautiful South, right?
Yeah.
But anyways, we are now approaching our last episode of Roots Chats for now. We have covered the main series, we've covered Next Generations, and Magellan has done us the favor of watching some of the side stuff. But in the year 2016, in a time where America needed to discuss its own history more than ever, as it does today, some people decided to get together and make an 8-hour, 4-episode event, which is a remake of Roots. It's called Roots. It's Roots 2016. Mm-hmm. And we're going to be discussing it. We're going to discuss the entirety of it because, like with our coverage of the 2009 Prisoner remake, it doesn't really feel like a remake needs the episode by episode analysis that an original series does. Mm-hmm. It seems pretty straightforward. As I understand Roots 2016, it is attempting to be more, slightly more realistic, and like dark, and honestly addressing the history of Kunta Kinte and his legacy. It covers him coming to America, his time in Jufre, and also all the way up to Chicken George.
It seems to cover everything from the original series, more or less.
Yeah. So, and does that in 4 episodes. Has some interesting credits behind it. I believe Mario Van Peebles directed the 2nd episode, which, sure. It's got a lot of talent, though. And we're going to watch and we're going to talk about it, and hopefully it's good. Again, I've heard a lot of things. The main thing that I heard that I was like, we should really watch this, is that it actually portrays Jufre as like a bustling, large area with a lot of people. It's like kind of metropolitan because it was not a small village with 10 people in it at all.
Yeah.
But yeah, we'll see how an attempt to like recontextualize Roots succeeds or fails in 2016.
Yeah.
So we'll be talking about that next week. And I think that with that, we can take it to the plug zone.
Yeah, let's do it. And that is available on Hulu, by the way.
Yep, History Channel's website if you don't have Hulu, and Hulu as well has it for free to watch. So check it out. If you, dear listener, would like to contact us, you can send us an email at chatspod@gmail.com. That's chatspod@gmail.com. We are also on Twitter at chatspod, and we have a subreddit where our wonderful listeners are going through old chats episodes and discussing them. That's reddit.com/r/chatspod. We just got to a discussion of the Farscape episode, Dog with Two Bones, which was one of our first guest episodes.
Truly, I remember that one. That was a good one.
It was a really good one. We had one of our best guests. Not that any of our guests are not great, but Brian was seriously an excellent guest.
Yeah.
And you can check all that stuff out. Our discussions of it are over on the subreddit. We would like it if you could rate us on Apple Podcasts or your podcast platform of choice. Helps us get on the algorithm and all that stuff. If you'd like to support us, we have a Patreon over at patreon.com/chatspod. You can help keep the lights on, help keep the show running, and you get a whole suite of bonus content for as just at $5 a month. You get the whole thing. That's our backlog. That's our new stuff. That's the ability to vote on more content. It's kind of a bounty of things. And as always, we like to say this, but especially on Roots Chats, if you feel your money is spent better spent somewhere else, specifically towards Black Lives Matter and other works towards advancing racial justice, do that. And if you have some sort of way of just proving to us that you do that, we would gladly give you a link to access our Patreon content without having to donate to us, because we believe that that money is definitely spent better towards those causes.
Yeah.
And finally, we like to end our episodes of chats with a segment called Chatsums, where Magellan and I recommend the listener something we've been enjoying this week, whether it's a piece of media, an activity, or whatever. And I'd like to start with you, Magellan. What are your Chatsums for this week?
I have two Chatsums. The first is a book that I've been reading the past couple days that I think is really lovely, and I would highly recommend. It's called, people maybe have heard about it before. It's kind of famous, I think. It's called Invisible Cities by Italo Calvino. It was originally an Italian book that was published sometime in the 1970s. Essentially, it's called a novel in most places where you can see it described, but I don't know that I would consider it a novel. It's more a collection of prose poems, more accurately, I think. Mm-hmm. The frame of it is essentially, it's the story of a fictionalized version of Marco Polo talking to the Emperor Kublai Khan, having journeyed through Kublai Khan's vast empire. Marco Polo is now telling Kublai Khan about the cities that exist within his empire so that he can have an understanding of what his empire looks like and what the sort of common themes or ideas are. And so each section is about a different city, and all the cities are sort of imaginary places that are described in these fantastical ways. And ultimately it's, you know, Marco Polo's descriptions are these meditations on desire and memory and humanity, and it's a really beautiful book. So I would highly recommend, if people are looking for something that, you know, you can sort of digest in chunks, you can read for 10-15 minutes a day and put down and kind of tool around in your mind for the rest of the day, I would say Invisible Cities by Italo Calvino is a great book for that. And then the other Chatsum that I have is a YouTube channel that I've been having a lot of fun with, watching their videos and laughing. And it's a channel called Two Set Violin. And it's basically these two violinists who do a range of things. They call themselves like a classical comedy channel. So sometimes they'll like do little challenges, or sometimes they will react to videos of like people playing violin in movies and how bad it is. Or, you know, they'll do any number of different things that are tangentially or directly related to classical music. And they just have a really fun dynamic, and they're very charming. So I recommend Two Set Violin as well.
Yeah, I like their stuff a lot. The couple of videos I watched after you recommended them to me, I was like, oh, yeah. It's like a specific type of YouTube format, but if you're into it, it's like, yeah, that's, I could watch a lot of these.
Yeah.
Fabulous. I have one Chatsum this week. It's a show that I had heard recommended on another Chatsum podcast, which was Fake Doctors, Real Friends. Which is a podcast about Scrubs. The creator of Scrubs, Bill Lawrence, was on an episode recently, and he was talking about his new series, which is called Ted Lasso. This show has kind of an interesting history. It was based on a series of two ads, that were done back in like 2013 on NBC Sports as they got the rights, the U.S. rights to broadcast the Premier League, which is a European soccer tournament that's very popular. And they did this character where Jason Sudeikis plays like a American football coach coming to Europe to like coach a soccer team, and the sort of wacky hijinks that ensue. And you know, the ads themselves are fine. I know a lot of sports fans that are big fans of that really like those. But the new series, which is the one downside to this, Chatsum, is that it's only on Apple TV Plus. So it's like chock full of, it's on an Apple streaming service you have to pay for. It's full of Apple product placement, and it's like in 4K HD. And I got to tell you, man, watching a comedy in 4K is like,
it's weird.
It's too weird. It changes everything. It just feels weird. Seriously. But Ted Lasso, the series, kind of does away with the like cynical laughing at the character of Ted, and makes him really, really lovable. And kind of like brings it home with this nice message that you don't have to be super knowledgeable about a sport to be a good coach. You can be a good person and encourage your players to be good people, and that'll just kind of like magnetize goodness towards you. And it's very, very funny. It's three episodes came out all at the same time on the 14th of August, and they're going to start doing week-to-week episodes. So however you want to watch it, find it online, check it out. I don't think it's for everyone, but it's very, I laughed a lot, like gut laughs. And gotta be honest, guys, especially now more than ever, like just having a sincere, like warm, wholesome comedy that doesn't like betray its own storyline by being nice like that was really good for me. So again, that was Ted Lasso, the TV series. Check it out.
Cool.
And that, dear listener, is going to do it for this episode of Roots Chats. Thank you to Magellan, as always, for being the rock to my hard place. And thank you for listening to this episode of Roots Chats. Peace.